everybody. This is the American Idol recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. My name is Mike Bloom, talking about the top 10 going down to the top 7 of American Idol 16. A lot of...
When you wish upon a star.
Oh my god, Snow White has come into the room.
In a... I don't know. That. No. That's also not Snow White, so...
Yeah, it's. I think that's.
What are you
going to
do?
I mean, there's loose theming there, you know?
Snow White goes, "Aww." And then birds come and land on her.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she does.
I mean, we should talk about the fact that, you know.
I'm as pale as Snow White.
I mean, you have a. I mean, especially with your new haircut.
I am Snow White.
I mean, unfortunately, they did not have a song from Ratatouille, or I would have been on that. Like,
so true. So true. Anyway, sorry, continue your intro.
Well, we got all the formalities out of the way before I was serenaded by my lovely wife.
When you show
up. Oh, I'm sorry, repeat on the track.
This is like when I walk around the house singing at home at my parents' house, and my mom goes, "Wow, so glad we paid for those voice lessons when you were younger."
And that is sarcasm for those of you that don't notice.
Because I'm sure I could sing better than that, but I'm choosing not to.
It's beautiful in its own way. But Angela, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. It's been a crazy, crazy work week. So I'm happy to take this little retreat into Disney World, Disneyland, Disney, ABC, propaganda.
Propaganda.
I don't know. They go nuts with these shows. So this is very in my wheelhouse because now that American Idol is on ABC, they are doing a Disney night, which is very much so the Dancing with the Stars thing. You know, that's what they do every season. They do a Disney night where they dance to either a Disney movie, or they're like a Disney character, or, and more often than not, there is a recent Disney movie coming out that they will do a song from or dance to. I don't think they did that in this, but which I love, because you know what? Nobody wants to hear that new. They just want to hear the classics.
Well,
they want to hear the
be,
cool
I guess,
stuff.
What, like The Incredibles 2 or a song
from
Avengers Infinity War?
That's like. No, they would do like a Disney movie. But anyway, getting off track. Yeah,
no, we got off the track just so we know. As soon as you
sorry,
singing,
everybody, just like this episode of American Idol that started voting right away, we're here to get off track right away.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. The first episode where we as a country have an entire control over the fates of these 10 young singers.
Just so you guys know, I did my research and I downloaded the American Idol app and I voted at the beginning of the show.
You have your little I voted sticker to confirm it.
No, but I did go into the app just because I was like, we got to see what this is about because this is very strange. So I downloaded the app and it took me pretty much like 15 minutes to download the app and get signed in. It took a long time.
What else is in that app besides the voting mechanism?
That's a great question. Let's open it up.
Because I feel like there's a lot of accoutrement in there if it's going to take that long to download or internet connection.
No, I think it was because I think it was because I was downloading it as it was like starting the show. Like if I had been a better American Idol viewer, I would have done it prior to the start of the show. But yeah, anyway, you sign in and it, yeah, no, there's a bunch of videos and stuff, but,
that makes sense. You probably watch the videos there behind the scenes stuff.
And then there's like, there's
a nice behind the scenes video of Idina Menzel flirting with Cade.
Oh my God, love that. Along the bottom, there's something called the fan feed. But you go to the vote section now, it says voting is closed. Well, clearly, because it's now Wednesday.
Yeah, unfortunately, those of you that are looking to vote for American Idol this week, you're a little too late. But we'll get into this episode. We'll talk through all 2 hours of it. Only 10 performances. It's the first time, I think, this entire season that we're only talking about 10 performances in one night instead of 20.
It's nice.
Instead of 28 like we did last week.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm glad that we can sort of delve in a little bit deeper into the performances and sort of talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, and then, you know, go off on our usual tangents without having to like speed ourselves up at the end and be like, okay, we gotta finish, you know. So
well,
that's
let's
good.
Let's start with how the episode starts, because we alluded to this, but let's, I mean, Katie
went all out.
Katie
and
was,
I mean
for various reasons. We have the cosplay, but we also just have like the apple shtick and the
yeah. So she started out on a good note for me because I do appreciate her just being all in on American Idol, because I think when we initially started the season, we thought she came across as a little bit above it all, a little bit too, you know, I'm a star, you know, I'm the judge and I'm like the coolest. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that she has warmed up quite a bit and is now coming out and she's playing. She's doing the fun stuff. And so it's Disney night. Disney night on Dancing with the Stars is the fun night. They all get paddles that when you get a 10, it's Disney Mickey ears, mm-hmm. you know? So like, it's not necessarily to be taken seriously when it comes to what the judges are doing.
I mean, to be honest, we could also say that about the judging panel in general, because I think we've sort of figured out a few weeks in, like, these are all lovely individuals and they make for entertaining television. But I think at this point, we're starting to realize that they might not be the most constructively critical.
Yeah, but I also mean, from a production standpoint, it's clearly supposed to be a very fun night.
Yeah.
You know, they've started off, you know, just in a fun way. And they're also, with everyone's package, they're sending them to Disneyland with a family member. They bring Idina Menzel in to mentor them.
Yeah,
you know,
let's talk about the wickedly talented Adele Dazeem as the mentor this week. I loved her.
She did a great job.
I thought she was, because, you know, it's, you sometimes wonder with these mentors of like, are they going to be, to your point of what you said about Katie, are they going to be so like in their heads about, oh, I'm on American Idol, that like they won't actually offer anything? But, and there were a couple of times when Idina would, when she would say like, I can't give you any notes, which I think meant like, I don't have anything to give you. But I think when she was, you know, nitpicking things, I think it was for good reasons.
Yeah. And she was giving them like, okay, well, I'm viewing this as somebody who could feasibly be judging you. So here's how I think you can make it even better. So, you know, you can do that. You can not do that. That's where we're at. But back to Katy Perry for a hot second. So, yeah, so her sort of arc throughout the show was, I felt like she started off on a really good note. I was very into it. I thought, this is great. She's really committing to it. And then she just sort of goes off the rails. She just sort of like loses it a little bit when they start doing shoeies with her high heel. And then she's talking in the stupid voice. Like,
yeah, so I was going to say, were you not in when she talked in the voice for that first round?
The first round was okay, 'cause it was like right away. But it was also like, she should have done it for a sentence and then dropped it. And so it was just a little sticky. And then as it got to be like the last contestant and she was just like still doing the princess routine.
Yeah, so she brought it around. For those of you that don't remember or didn't see, I think it was for Dennis's.
It was for Dennis. She was like, an old woman backstage gave me this apple. I really hope that when I bite it, it gives me some sort of medicine to get me through this trial that I'm going through. Like, Katie, no, like clearly this is not the time for that.
Mean, I would be more miffed if in a normal context, she would be saying something that has merit, to be quite honest.
I guess. But I just said also in juxtaposition. So Katie went all out. Katie did it big, go big or go home, which honestly, I prefer that for Disney night. The other two, like, crumb bums.
They didn't care
to even bother to wear Mickey ears.
Yeah, they were like Jim on the Halloween episodes of The Office.
Like, come on, guys.
Whole punch Lionel.
I'm sorry. Did they not talk to Katie beforehand? Because I do feel like, I mean,
like, they talked to Katie and Katie was like, I don't care, which all the power to her. Like, she was clearly the one to talk about.
And she looked
good.
She
did.
That lipstick was perfect. Perfect. Like Katy Perry, like Katy Perry.
Oh, perfect.
Perfect. Anyway, yeah, so I feel like, and then they felt like it's fine if they didn't want to dress up, whatever. But then they sort of judged her the whole night, which I did not appreciate. They were just like, oh, Katy, like, oh, with the shtick, like, oh, blah, blah.
I feel like that's, do you think that's Lionel's MO? I feel like Luke and her are like,
they're buds.
If I'm getting a sense of things, I don't want to read too far into this, I feel like Katy and Luke are like,
well, they're more in line age-wise.
We're going to be goofballs together, and Lionel's like,
where am I?
Here's the thing.
When I was with the Commodores.
Yes, exactly.
We didn't wear costumes.
We'll do the Lionel Richie drinking game next week.
Yeah, we should.
Says, here's the thing. You're the package. Or talking about the Commodores or name dropping somebody.
So funny. But yeah, so I feel like that was something to take home. But so the show was set up where they did each contestant where they would surprise them with a loved one and a trip to Disneyland. And then while they were in Disneyland, they met up with Idina Menzel to sing their song and then get notes from her. So my question for you is, did they pick their song or was their song given to them?
I think that with ordinarily, I would say that it was kind of given to them because they've done Disney songs on Idol in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Ruben Studdard, one of his big moments, was singing A Whole New World, to the point where, I don't know if you remember the hit spinoff American Juniors, but I specifically remember Ruben Studdard and some little boy singing A Whole New World together in front of this really chintzy green screen.
I don't remember that, but and it's like sort of ringing a bell. I'm just like, maybe I hated Ruben Studdard so much that I like blocked him out.
Did you remember American Juniors?
Yes.
Where
yes.
they picked, it was, but it wasn't like making the band where they had five winners and they were in a band. I think they just picked five winners.
Yeah, no, I recall that. And it was just like, you win. Okay, cool. I also was just like, no, Ruben, you're no clay. Get off my screen.
So they've done Disney songs in the past. I mean, we're definitely going to compare, you know, someone's version of Circle of Life to Jennifer Hudson's Circle of Life, for example. But I feel like those were a little more few and far between. I feel like here they open up the proverbial Disney vault and let them pick whatever they want, which is why you get some of these more unorthodox
which
choices.
I love, because I do feel like it gives you the opportunity to sing to your strengths, whereas and this is something that happens in Dance with the Stars. Sometimes they're given a song or a dance number to a Disney tune that is just not going to make a good dance number because it's like Coco, or it's something that's just not going to work for them because it's the Mickey and Minnie like first animated short, you know, and it's like
that would be very hard to sing. To be fair, yes.
But it's like a challenge more so than something that they know will be in their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So we should also. Just sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, of course.
I'm so sorry. Our marriage is falling apart right now.
At the seams. All you listeners are privy to.
At the seams. We should discuss how at every interstitial moment there was an a cappella band singing
D cappella
singing the most buck wild versions of Disney songs. They were terrible arrangements.
I mean, to be fair,
they had like 3 seconds.
Yeah, they had like 30 seconds. Like I remember, I think it was
Be Our Guest.
Yeah, Be Our Guest.
One.
Be Our Guest. Put our service to the test.
That was
it. All right, we're back.
I loved.
Did I just click like the preview on the iTunes song?
Yeah,
right now?
No, it was bad.
Brief
it was
glimpse
bad.
Of it. I don't want to pay $2.99 for that.
It was a good idea because, and this is something I'm sorry to keep comparing this to Dancing with the Stars, but they do this in Dancing with the Stars during the commercial breaks. They'll have the troupe members do. Dances where there's no lyric, it's just instrumental, and it's always a beautiful like sweeping lyrical dance, and it's just a quick like maybe like 10 second like dance duo doing a thing. Like I remember on a few seasons ago it was like it was Keo and one of the other troupe members, they did a Snow White dance, and I just remember it was so pretty, and it was just in between a commercial break, and I feel like that's what they were going for, just like something to entertain.
Well, I'm reading up on D Cappella. Apparently, like when
they
said
the
it just got launched, like like 3 days ago, it was announced. So, like,
what D Cappella?
D Cappella. This was like their coming out party.
Ooh.
I mean,
no, they did fine.
They did fine.
I mean, they're no pentatonics, but what are you gonna do?
No Disneytonics. Well, but that sort of ties into what I wanted to speak about before we get into each performance, which is the structure of the show. So we had a lot of questions in our heads going in.
Structure.
Using my Dr. Evil quotes.
No, stop. Continue.
But we had a lot of questions going in as to how this real-time voting was going to work. And I guess we found out now. I'm assuming they're going to keep using this throughout, which is voting is open all through the 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. When I signed on at the start, I voted.
After you downloaded it for 15 minutes.
Right. But as soon as I signed on, I could vote for anybody I wanted. You can give 10 votes to all the contestants if you wanted to. And then you just submit them and you're done.
But and so you can change those around at any point. But voting is open for basically, I'd say like an hour and 50 minutes until the final end of the final commercial break. So we'll get to this. But my question is, we were worried last time that. Oh, you know, the unfortunate thing is that when you have people going last, people don't have time to come in. I unfortunately think we kind of saw that fruit to bear this
week. Yeah, I mean, Dennis killed it. He sang that song home, and I just think because he went last, he didn't make it through.
Yeah, so, I mean...
It's quite possible that's not the case, but I think it's also very possible.
I would say it didn't help. That
it
he went
definitely left. Didn't help. And Ryan kept dropping hints the whole time, like, some people are leading the pack.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. Thanks, Ryan. Like, can we get those stats, though? Because that'd be helpful for our podcast.
So I can understand why they did this, because I don't think they want to, like, because I've seen, I think they do this on, like, X Factor UK, apparently, where they open up the voting window for, like, 10 minutes after everyone's performed before the results are announced. And I can understand that, especially in these initial stages, they don't want to overwhelm the system. Yeah. At the same time, you'd have to imagine this is a pretty darn big disadvantage to considering that people were able to put Maddie's performance in their head, for example, for basically an hour and a half. And Dennis, they're like, okay, we just listened. All right, better.
And there's also the pre-existing notion, like, I mean, I'm that person. I went in, I didn't listen to any of the performances.
Yeah, Ryan said, even before we started, like, wow, even before we started, 1.6 million people in the system. Yeah. Like, is that a good thing?
Yeah,
people are already prejudging this.
I did that. Like, I was like, I'm just going to vote for the people I like because I know they're good. And and then I'll change it if it's like, if I feel like, I honestly just gave everyone 10 votes, though.
Oh, you're so equitable.
I mean... Yeah, why not?
What a socialist way.
It was more of an experiment anyway. I don't usually vote on these things.
Well,
that's like the cool podcaster thing to say.
Yeah, exactly. Very
I podcast about it, but I don't really participate in it.
I vote in exposure, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see moving forward because, you know, like the last spot used to be this pimp spot because it was like the last thing people saw before they went to vote afterwards. But now
it's like the worst spot.
Is it a reverse pimp spot?
Yeah.
You know? Or maybe being in the middle is the best spot because people might forget about those that were in the beginning and focus more on, you know, what have you done for me lately? So I just thought it was interesting. In a perfect world, I would have liked them to like maybe squish more of the performances together in the front, do a de cappella medley or have, you know, a group number.
And then open up voting like at the end.
Yeah, and open up. So finish off with Dennis. Open up voting and then do
for
like
everybody.
Yeah, for everybody. Yeah. And then for the next like 5 to 10 minutes and then do like a group number or do the shoey and do like banter then almost combining the shenanigans they would usually do in a results show there and then make the announcements at the very end. That would be my way to do it.
We'll
but I can
see.
But you know, not my decision. I can understand why they did it.
Yeah, it's for sure not your decision, but
my decision.
Your decision, your de cappella decision. Anyway, let's talk about these people. I'm really excited to talk about the first one. Who's Maddie Poppy? I love her. So she gets to go to Disneyland and she's never been there before.
I mean, neither of us have been there.
I've never been to Disneyland, but I've been to Disney World.
Yeah, we're East Coasters, so I think it makes sense that Disneyland's our place.
So she meets up with her best friend, Emily, and they have like a little shopping montage. The thing about Disneyland is they all go to the same spot in Disneyland. It's like this Pixar land. I noticed. Yeah. I was like, oh, is this like the spot they're supposed to go to? Like they didn't have any like rights for any other
Disney's California Adventure. Maybe they just wanted to keep everything.
Stop
like,
pretending you know like the layout of Disneyland.
I kind of know it. So let's talk about. Yeah. So we're talking about, you know, on North. One of the reasons why I think these singers chose their own songs is because I highly doubt the producers of American Idol would have handed Maddie the bare necessities.
No, definitely not. It's a very obscure song, and it's also like traditionally sung by a man. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. It was so cool and so quirky. And I think it definitely was in her wheelhouse. And I think that Idina Menzel gave her such perfect critique, which was, you know, show your range. Like you're definitely a great singer. So let's pop some of those notes and make sure that you're like going out there and singing because
showing like a new side of yourself.
Yeah. And I think she even says like, I don't want to be a one trick pony. And I think she, not to say she has been a one trick pony, but it's sort of all similar styling, similar like depth and similar like types of songs. Yeah. So,
And this is a way to not necessarily step out of your wheelhouse, but to like take a few steps outside of your comfort zone to be like,
yeah, like put the foot out the door.
Hey, look at me belt this note, you know? And I feel like she pulled it off well. So yeah, I think the way the song was done was interesting. It was like very folksy. I mean, she, to the quirky point, she had the ukulele. There was like this 3-piece bluegrass band around her playing. So it just put a smile on my face. And I think it was a good way to start off the show. And then she got to pull out the notes when they do this like random like, moment in the middle of it where like everything holds and then she
it
like
was so good.
And then it gets back into
and she looks so cute. She had little flowers in her hair and maybe that prompted Lionel's saying she's coming of age right before his eyes, which I didn't think was appropriate.
It's a weird like daddy daughter moment.
And it was also like she's not like known as like the young person in the show.
Yeah.
So like what was that about? But yeah, this was where also when they're judging, Katie does her like princess
I
voice.
I just want to say
that I'm so proud of you for doing the best and really going for those notes. And I really appreciate your bravery.
Yes.
Yeah. It's terrible.
I think Maddie probably checked something off on her bucket list of getting, you know, compliments from Snow White.
Maybe.
I assume that's on.
I think she was like, okay, thanks, Katie.
So, yeah, I thought she did a good job. I thought it was, you know, probably not my favorite performance of hers, but I think per usual with Maddie, very solid.
Yeah, because it wasn't like a super emotional one. So, and I think those are the ones we like from her.
Yeah, but I liked it was
good.
I like when she does.
I mean,
tempo.
I love her, so like whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Well, let's move on to Journey here. Now, even though, you know, we didn't get the ultra modern Disney song, we got a pretty modern one.
I love this song, and this was perfect for Journey. I felt like it was.
Mm-hmm. So she chooses How Far I'll Go from Moana. She also gets a visit from her mom, Gretchen, which is good because we start to see a little bit with some of these people who got judges saves, but not America saves. Yeah. They have to sort of live with this
like overwhelming
the sword
sadness.
Hanging above their head of like, hey, the country didn't really want you here, or at least they wanted these six people before you.
Right.
So I think that, you know, Idina, we're always cracking into like this thing with Journey of like, she's so effortless when she sings. Now it's more about tapping into those emotional aspects and becoming more vulnerable.
Well, I think the thing Idina was saying was that she's trying to find something wrong with her singing. And I think mm-hmm. that's the thing that's wrong with her singing. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. So yeah. Stop overthinking the overthinking.
Well, what I wonder as well, because I feel like this has plagued some Idol contestants in the past, but when you have more weeks to the finals, mm-hmm. sometimes if you're doing really well for a long
time, there's like too much to nitpick on.
Well, it's not as strong of a narrative as someone who starts a little bit more of an underdog and really grows throughout. And
it's
as a
true.
Result, you have people that sort of unfortunately stumble near the end. I'm thinking of someone like Melinda Doolittle from season 6, who like always did really well, but because these other two people around her just got so much support from really growing into their own, that's she sort of fell by the wayside there. So maybe they're doing it to sort of keep people invested in Journey, in the Journey. I'm not entirely sure. But so you said you loved How Far I'll Go. What did you think of the performance
really
of it?
I just really love this song, too. So I feel like it, and she is somebody who, like we said before, sings really effortlessly, and she sings really clearly, which is something I love. Like, if you can hit notes, like, tonally, and it's on pitch, and it's like very straightforward, and I think she just did a great job of delivering the song without too much variation, which I extremely dislike, which we'll talk about later from one of my favorite Disney movies of all time. Somebody murdered it and left it in the street, talking about Gabby. But I feel like Journey really just went out there, she sang it, and it sounded like Journey. It didn't sound like a character from Moana, but it also sounded like the song.
I agree with Lionel that I think she did sing from her heart a little bit. I mean,
it was emotional. It's an emotional song.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's easy given the material because it's like
what I'm saying. She picked a good song.
Yeah, it's an I Want song, basically, which, like, from a musical theater contest provides so much emotion just in the lyrics of it. So I thought she did a good job of it. I'll admit, in the beginning, she was giving me like a little bit of a blank stare to the camera, but then she eventually got into it.
She does have a little bit of like a dead eye thing sometimes.
That like those doe eyes. Yeah. Speaking of eyes, what did you think about that eye makeup?
I loved it. It was great.
It was like very sparkly.
Very sparkly.
But I felt like once the beat sort of came in, when she got to the chorus, that's when I think she really got into it. To your point about not straying too far, there was one point when she like riffed on one line.
She did a little bit.
That I was like, I don't know how I feel about that, because I feel like it's one of these songs that like
don't change it.
Yeah, you're okay not riffing too. Well, it's also was like it was a weird.
It already has it in the song.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
To go up and down, you know, so you don't need to like add riffs.
But
it's
I feel like
boring.
she like nailed the key change. Like the everything
Definitely.
Was there as per usual with Journey. I'm happy she was able to show an emotional side of herself. I don't know. Do we on Dancing with the Stars again? Going back to that, well. When they say that, like, one couple's in the bottom two, it doesn't necessarily mean they got the second least votes.
It's true.
Journey was the last one to be safe. Can we assume that she got the fourth least amount of votes?
I don't think so. I think that they did that randomly. I don't think that they...
I mean, it's just weird because the four people there were the four people who the judges sent through.
I guess. I just don't think... I don't see how Journey couldn't be somebody who America liked.
I don't know.
Is it because she is married to a woman?
I don't know.
Is it because, like, Like, I honestly have no idea.
We are playing a dangerous game trying to put ourselves into the mind frame of the typical American
populace.
Of,
like, the Midwest American populace. I, honestly, like, she's, her voice is perfect. She's singing the right songs. Like, there's really no reason America shouldn't like her, if unless it's one of those situations where they're just voting for everyone else.
Yeah. Like, she, just there were six people that were more popular than her. I think that last week it was an instance where, again, she sang the song Bang Bang, which was...
That made sense.
Speaking towards stepping out of her wheelhouse, like, but it wasn't her strongest performance. Yeah, I think we talked about that last week, how it was understandable that she got pushed through. But hopefully this still bodes well for her, because, yeah, I agree. I mean, I really like pretty much everyone who's left at this point. But I think that she in particular, it just has such a good voice.
Such a good voice. She could seamlessly go into, like, in music and pop. And she could get into the business right away.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm excited to see... I'm really excited to see how these people tackle Prince next week.
Oh my gosh, such a strange theme.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at the end. But let's move.
The other thing I wanted to say was that the I feel like the lighting cues this week were really, really extra, and I really, really enjoyed them.
I mean, they did a lot of fun stuff with the screens, which I think they were able to be more specific because it was a theme instead of just here's a song.
Like Gobos,
So this one had like the island background.
Yeah,
and
I loved
the sunset.
It was so fun. I felt like they got to be really creative.
All right, let's move on. So we're talking about stepping out of their wheelhouse. So we were wondering, going in, like, what is Cade going to do here?
I died for this. This was the best.
So you were like every
I'm such a Cade fan.
Cadehead?
Cadehead. No, I don't know. What do we call ourselves? I don't know.
Cade Crusher?
That's a little
Cade Crusher sounds like he's a robot.
Sounds like drugs. but no, Cade is, he's great. I'm living for him because he definitely does not have the best voice on the show, and I don't care, which is a huge thing for me to say.
Well, yeah. The thing about Cade is, I'll say that, like, his range is definitely more limited than the other contestants, but he works it.
Yeah, and this song actually demonstrated that he can sing well.
Yeah.
You know, when he's not doing the strong rock songs where he's pushing his range and he's doing a bit more of like a metal shout, which I think doesn't necessarily lend itself well to like a more glamorous singing. Mm-hmm. This was, I thought, really good.
Yeah, so he sang Kiss the Girl from The Little Mermaid, but the way it was delivered was like...
I'm like squirming, excited.
It reminded me of like Nirvana Unplugged.
Like a Tiny Desk version of Kiss the Girl.
Yeah, well, maybe it's because like his voice still had that sort of grungy grit to it without like the big head-shaking vibrato, like you said. But before we do that, can we just talk about his sister?
Oh my god, they're so cute together.
Well, first off, we find out a little bit more about Chunky Cade.
Oh my god. So yeah, Chunky, maybe this is why I love Cade, because this is an unknown fact, but Angela was like Chunky Angela.
You're an FFK.
I was an FFK. But so I, up until like maybe middle school, was like, had like all of my baby fat, and then it just like fell off, and like I got taller, and then you just like, you lose your baby fat, you get thinner. But like, was definitely like bullied in elementary school for being super like chubby. And so like, I saw those pictures of Cade and I was like, yes, Cade, working that chub. Just so cute. Oh my god. And I love that his sister's like, it's so funny to see girls fawning over him because he was like my chubby brother.
Yeah, his sister was awesome. I love this exchange where he's like, I'm gonna sing a Kiss the Girl, and she's like, oh, so the opposite of what you actually do.
Yeah, she's like the perfect sister.
Well, and then we should also probably talk about, I mean, there's gonna be a lot of romantic affiliations going on with this segment, but did you believe what the judges were saying, that Idina was like visibly verklempt?
No.
Or like flustered?
I didn't think so. I felt like she just didn't have much to say to him. Like, there wasn't, like, he was being flirty with her and she was just like playing along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't think she had, like, he's a young guy.
It's a Disney week, so you can't go too PG-13.
Yeah, but I also think that like he was flirty and she was flirting back, and it was like being like cutesy. Like, they were doing it for the cameras. They weren't like, it wasn't a thing. And then on top of that, you were even like, he's like a good old boy. Like, he's like not going to be someone.
No, because like, he said he was like a minister beforehand. Like, he comes from like a Texas farm. Like,
yeah, like, let's all relax. I think it's Arkansas.
Arkansas?
I don't know where he's from.
Somewhere.
I'm clearly not a Cadester.
You lost your Kate card. That's what is the Kate card. So we talked a little bit about Kiss the Girl, but give me your thoughts on it. First off, to your point about the screens, I loved like the reflection that they put
on the
floor.
Was great. It was very like a modern production of The Little Mermaid. Like,
well, hopefully not the modern production of The Little Mermaid where they were dressed kind of garishly.
Oh, yeah, that was bad. Let's also discuss after his performance when they were asking him about like who he was. Maybe he was like dedicating this song to someone, and he was just like, yeah, I might be dedicating it to someone. And they like cut to Gabby. So, like, are Kate and Gabby dating? Are they holding hands backstage?
I think it might be limited to that.
Are they kissing?
Well, I wonder, first off, like, kind of shame on you, producers, because, like, he didn't even mention it. He's like, well, we've got the footage right here.
But it's, like, literally just Gabby, like, turning her face away. So, I mean, it's quite possible, like, nothing's happening.
I bet you he's, like, backstage flirting with her. And
they, like, made something out of it.
But, like, of the girls, like, let's look at the girls that are left, right?
I mean, she's the only one that
Journey
is
married. Katie is Katie.
Katie and Kate, imagine. I would die.
Maddie, I feel like, is like just very chill slash also like a little awkward herself.
And it would be a great couple, though.
Yeah, I wonder also, like, I know people were wondering, like, are the producers pushing this narrative to get a Gabby and Kate final?
Oh, for sure. Or just a Gabby and Kate romance, I think.
Yeah, to get the love triangle involved with Katy Perry. Because Katy, again, to your point about really going for the effort, she goes into like this demonic voice.
She was like, how dare you dedicate this to someone else?
And then
else?
She tried to, she almost lifted the table off of its pegs.
Oh, Katy. Yeah, anyway. No, but I really enjoyed this song that Kate did this week.
Yeah, I think it was enough, like sort of like with Maddie, it was enough of a step out, like relatively outside of his wheelhouse to garner comments of you try new things, and I think he sounded good on it too. And actually, since like All Along the Watchtower, it might be my favorite performance of his.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other ones were much more in the wheelhouse of like a rock song, whereas this was like vocally more fun.
Yeah, it's like a cross between like Kurt Cobain and Springsteen almost for me.
Springsteen's
like,
a good
yeah in
a
terms
good
of like
call.
that gravelly yeah. voice. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Miss Ada.
Oh, Ada.
She's the
America let me down here.
She's the first to go. I don't know. So I don't know if you saw this. This was sent to me by a friend of the show, Mike Block. But
I've been following his posts. So,
well, your former lover, Clay Aiken, wrote an op-ed for New York Magazine, maybe, where he said basically like, hey, spoiler alert, Ada is one of the three that gets eliminated. Ada didn't lose because she's a drag queen. Ada lost because she was not the best singer.
Okay. I mean, here's my take on this. This was not her best performance.
No.
And like, I don't think she would disagree with that. I don't think she would say, yeah, no, I killed this and I should have stayed. But I also don't think, I think it's naive to think that she was lacking. She wasn't lacking votes because she was a drag queen.
Yeah, I would
say. You know
say,
what I'm saying?
Like, I completely agree. I think it's like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I would say that, you know, she was polarizing just because of where she was coming in. She was polarizing to begin with, and this performance did not necessarily rally people around her, at least in my opinion. This, her Circle of Life performance, unfortunately, might be my least favorite performance of hers that I've seen on the show. It just.
And I think that she just has been. She hit the bar so high so soon. And for somebody like her, I feel like she needs to be one of those people that comes out and just like hits it every time. And you just need to be so excited to see her every time. And this just was something that fell a little flat. And so when it falls flat, you're like, OK, I'm over it. But
so let's talk about this. So he goes in with Idina. Idina, you know, very wisely talks to her about like, hey, holding back on some of these things. She asks for a lower key to feel the pain in there. I don't know how much pain is involved in Circle of Life, but
I get what she's saying. I think she was talking about making it more of a warmer tone, because she's consistently singing these songs that are very strong, heavy handed high vocal songs.
Yeah,
so just a little bit of a warmer, a little bit more of like a natural tone.
And then she also gets a surprise visit from her fiance, Roland, who
oh
looks...
Oh my god, they were so funny
exactly
together. They
like
were
him.
So cute with their little, like, shaved heads. I
and
died.
Shaved heads with, like, with buns on top.
Yeah, they were so cute together, like, going around Disneyland. I loved it.
So, talking about the performance, I will say, from a visual perspective, it is night and day. A sunrise is happening on the Savannah, comparing how Ada used to look to how she looks now.
She looks amazing. She's like, she's a star up there. Like, I think that she just, she has all the confidence in the world. And I think that she also, when we say this isn't our favorite performance of hers, it's also, that's not saying that it wasn't an amazing performance.
Yeah,
you know,
I thought it was good. I thought, especially where it started, like, I think Idina was fine with the lower key because it was more warming, it was more welcoming.
I just didn't think it went anywhere from there.
I personally thought it fell apart at the key change.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's because of her fault or because of the way it was orchestrated, or
it's,
you know,
always tough. You know, I think my a cappella group ended up doing a version of it, and the key change is always so hard to nail in Circle of Life.
It's a hard song.
Yeah, but unfortunately what happened was maybe it was intonation, maybe it wasn't, but like she started cracking on some of those held notes. Like, it was just very pitchy and it was a little warbly and shouted at the end too. Like, it was unfortunate the way that it ended, because I thought it had the potential. I mean, it's tough to, you know, show up someone like Jennifer Hudson doing it, but and I was also, maybe this is my bias, I was still saddened that she didn't do Poor Unfortunate Souls, because that would have been
fantastic. Oh my god, that would have been amazing. And I think she should have leaned a little bit less into, and I know they wanted her to do this, and I know that this is probably the direction she would have gone either way, but lean a little bit less into the vulnerability side of things, because I think she did that last week, and lean a little bit more into the fun side of things. Like, go back to being Ada.
Yeah.
Like, be Ada Vox. Like, be a production, honey.
Like, well, so I guess, you know, maybe we can like memorialize these contestants as we move along here. Talking a bit about Ada, I mean, I am so happy she was on for myriad of reasons. One, I think this is great for her psychology, that even though she has sort of unfortunately been exposed to some of the worst parts that exist on the internet, she's someone who, you know, didn't get success in season 12 and got bullied as a result. And now she's able to sort of build her defenses up and really turn the comments back onto them. But I just love what her being on the show also represents too.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
that
for
like,
sure,
this is a culture that exists and people should be aware of it, because it's a hell of a lot of fun.
And I also think that she grew herself as well. I mean, she went through like quite a transformation over just a few weeks, and that's really great too.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I will say no shade to the other contestants, but I feel like she was going to be at least one of the top three most remembered contestants from this season.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And her voice is out of this world. I mean, her range alone.
Her range for a man. Let's remember that Adam Sanders is a man, but he is belting these high notes.
Yeah, I can't even belt those notes.
And even some of these female artists can't.
And so, like, I think that also just after this, you know, with some more, like, lessons and more delving deep into like who she wants to be as a performer, some makeup lessons, some wardrobe, some, you know, just a little bit more of I guess you can say like assessment of who she wants to be as Ada, she could be like a real star.
Yeah, and I'm happy that the judges embraced her.
Yeah, for
well.
Sure. I mean, Katie loves her.
Yeah, Katie like
she'll probably be on Katie's tour.
Yeah, Katie like took her under her wing. I think I can't remember if this was the one. No, I think there's another one where Katie said like, I don't know where this is going, but like, we're going to do something together.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on to, unfortunately, another person who went home this week. Let's talk about Michelle. And while I'll say that Ada kind of went out on a low note, not just because Idina Menzel told her to hit the low notes, I would say this might be my favorite, like, Michelle performance.
She sounded good.
This was like perfectly in her wheelhouse. So,
yeah.
So she goes even more modern than Moana. She goes to Coco and she sings Remember Me. So what did you think about her performance of this?
So I really liked her performance of this, and I think that she did an amazing job of singing it and vocalizing it. And I think she took the notes of Idina well, just sort of also by, and the judges, by not moving. I think that was her, like, the best thing she could have done is just stand still and sing. I think obviously it was her time to go. I think that, you know, she just sort of hit her limit, but I think if she had to, this was a good night for her to go out on.
Yeah. So I really liked it when it started out, because I think like this is the Michelle we haven't seen in a while. Maybe not since when she attempted If I Were a Boy, of like down tempo ballad. And like she has, for lack of a better term, like the culture as well that sort of exists behind it. And especially when she breaks into Spanish.
And I felt like it was a natural fit with that. It wasn't like she was trying to force that narrative on us, that I'm bilingual narrative. Like, I felt like this was more, I actually want to be doing this because I just saw my family and I feel really connected to my home and I want to be doing this, not Katie told me I need to do this, you know?
So that being said, when the beat kicked in, what you told me, I mean, I guess maybe I'm just thinking about like a certain version from the movie. I didn't remember.
This is the whole song.
Yeah, I just kind of wish it had stayed in there. You know, I don't know if I needed the beat to kick in just because we've seen that from Michelle
before.
It plays
during the credits.
Yeah, maybe I was thinking about the sad one that plays during the movie.
Well, I mean, okay.
I think it's just because I really like that. And then when it came into a version that like we know from Michelle, I was like, all right. I wanted to go back to the version that I really liked that was new from her.
It was still really good, though.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, like we said, she embraced stuff. She did, like, the whooping that they do in Coco as well, like the mariachi stuff. So.
Yeah, like, so she did some characterization, which was fun.
Yeah, I think this was probably the most fun, the happiest, I think, she was ever.
Yes, that's a good point, too.
So, I guess in that capacity, she went out on a high note, which is good. You know, if we were... great. If we were sending people home based on the performances they put out that night, surprisingly, I don't think I would have sent her home. But I guess based on body of work, she would probably be 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Me.
And honestly, I mean, it was a good performance, but it, I think if we had to send three people home, it wasn't like my top three.
Yeah.
Top ones. But anyway, I mean, Michelle's somebody that she's been okay for me for a while, but never in my top. Like, I mean, I was mad when she got made through the judges' pick. So I'm okay seeing her go here.
Yeah, Michelle was definitely one of those people. And no offense to her, but she definitely seemed like one of those people where in both the top 24 rounds and the top 14 rounds, we were like, okay, I kind of wanted another person to get through instead
of her. Yeah, we're not quite sure what's going on here. And maybe it's something we're missing, disconnect via TV, via in person. So.
But I'm appreciative of what she brings, which is different from the others in terms of bringing this more like...
Yeah, I like the variation.
Latin American, like dance pop stuff.
For sure.
So I'm happy that, again, she went out on a good note with that. Let's get back to some of the victors, though, those moving on to the top seven.
Let's talk about the disaster of the night.
So, for those of you that don't know, Angela is a giant fan of Pocahontas.
Yeah, so Pocahontas is my favorite Disney movie from when I was a little wee girl. I watched it all the time. Like, my mom had to keep buying me VHSs of it because I thought I was going to be Pocahontas. I was going to go into the woods and, like, I was just going to, like, live off the earth. I was a quiet kid. But I love Pocahontas. I love the music. I'm a huge fan of the music, and I feel like I just really, and this is really true for a lot of Disney movies, I really don't love when there's like the radio mix of
you mean
a song
over the credits when you have the title
like
song.
In Mulan, like when Christina Aguilera sings Reflection.
That was the thing that made her famous, though.
I know, but I just prefer when the person who was cast as the vocalist sings it. Some Judy Kuhn singing Colors of the Wind is so much better, and I just feel like this was like the radio mix of Colors of the Wind, and it was not my cup of tea. There were so many runs, and it was just like, it was all over the map for me.
Yeah, all over the trail, maybe. So, so let's talk about Gabby Barrett here. So first we get introduced to her sister, Gypsy, who has jet black hair. So I'm wondering, who has the dye job?
It looks like they both have the dye job.
So, so they're just disrespecting their family's hairline.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have that color blonde hair, and you don't have that color black hair, for your knowledge, typically speaking. I think they probably both have like some sort of like mousy brown hair, and they've just chosen to go.
I mean, it's a fun like image with the two of them.
I liked it. Yeah, it looked fun.
But yeah, this was one where the rehearsal, in my opinion, sounded good. And Idina's like, oh, I love that it sounds so simplistic. And then for some reason, I don't know if it's a disconnect or if it's her getting in her head. But when it started, I was like, oh, this sounded better in rehearsal. What happened?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if in rehearsal she just sang it like as it is in the movie. And then she changed her mind and decided to just like do it a little bit more fancy. I don't know.
I mean, her voice is very interesting because it does have this sort of like younger country twang
and
to it.
Like a grit kind of too.
And so she brings that in, and I don't know if it's necessarily like if she had changed,
it's not right for this song.
Yeah, if she had changed it up a little bit more, like some of these others did, maybe it would suit it a bit more, but because it was sort of left as is, it didn't necessarily, it jutted up against the tone tone of the song.
I just don't know why she chose this song, because this is a song for somebody who sings like Journey sings, or somebody who, even Katie could do this song, somebody who sings very clear and somebody who sings vocally like a theatrical singer.
Yeah.
So somebody who sings like very like on key, on pitch, like there's no like sort of like twang to their voice or grit to their voice. You know, it's not for like a country singer. Like there's so many Disney movies, like there's so many songs she could have sung, you know, so I'm just not sure why she chose this. But
yeah, I guess so. I mean, now that I think about it, this, I would say her and Ada might be my bottom two performances.
And this just makes me sad because Pocahontas is just everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe she loved the movie as well. And she's like, I want to sing this song. It'll satiate the little girl inside of me.
Yeah, but I would sing this song amazing. And that's the difference.
Lionel does. He pulls out Everybody Drink. He does call her the package, though. So
Lionel doesn't know what he's talking about.
What did you think about Katie's comment that she felt like now she's bringing more of the pop stardom than like the country twang?
I think that's just sort of her representation and her sort of whole package. I don't know what she was really referring to vocally there.
Yeah, I think that like the thing about Gabby is that her wheelhouse is sort of this pop country hybrid. I know I keep going back to the Miley Cyrus well, which is when she sang The Climb last week, but that's, I mean, that's the comparison that I'll make, because it really does feel like that, down to like the very youthful sounding voices.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's definitely something that, you know, she's trying to be. So I'm wondering just sort of where it'll go from here.
Okay, let's get to our next one, because I'm so excited about this.
Oh my God, I love him so much.
So let's talk about Michael first. I wrote in my notes like, oh, I love his goofy overalls. Not to be confused with like the actual goofy overalls. But
yeah, I did notice that in your voice. I was like, wait, is he dressed like Goofy?
But he's not wearing his jumpsuit.
No,
his
he's
lucky
wearing
jumpsuit.
Overalls. But that's okay, because I feel like it's still on brand what he's wearing.
So he has this really sweet visit from his grandma.
I love him so much. Like, he's just somebody who just instills such a natural, effortless joy. And he's really not trying. Like, he's quirky and he isn't trying to be quirky.
I love his conversations with Idina Menzel when, you know, he's talking about like how he's hoarse and he's sounding sick. And, you know, he responds, she's like, oh, well, hopefully you'll get better. He's like, oh, yes, in Jesus' name, I rebuke it. He's talking about how like he's gotten in a fist fight before when he was 8. I don't know how they got to that conversation.
Yeah, like he clearly just has, he's somebody who just has no, like, not no filter, but no sort of like wall up, sort of like predisposition for like stardom, or like he's not going to treat you differently because you're Idina Menzel. He's just going to talk to you like a human.
Completely agree. I think to that point, the segment ends really nicely when the producer's like, did you know what Idina said about you as you left the room? And he's like, what? And she says, you know, he's the best. And you could just see,
he was like,
he's not even internalizing things. He's just like, he is so ecstatic.
Yeah, he's so happy.
But let's talk about this. Let's talk about Beauty and the Beast. So, I mean, yes, it is the like a pop R&B cover that you experience at the end of the movie, but
a little bit different, because I think that he does it because he's a man also singing it. It's a little different. And he sings it in a way that it's vocally very clear. Like, it's not riffy.
It was so good. And again, I know I keep saying this every week, but he is just so enthralling to me, despite the fact that, like, he sings, you know, tale as old as time, true as it can be.
Yeah, and he holds the notes, too.
Yeah, well, he probably set the world record for Idol for, like, holding a note. He held a note for, like, a good 16 bars.
And I do feel like that's something that in these, like, remixes, sometimes they can be very breathy. And I don't feel like this was like that. So.
No, he's very forward with his tone. And yeah, I mean, I'll admit it got me a little emotional when his arms go wide and he just holds this note out and you just feel the joy emanating from him that he gets to do this.
He just loves to sing.
And then he, like you said, it's fairly straightforward until the end when he's able to like throw some flourishes in there, jump between his falsetto and his chest voice. But I just think it was just a really well done piece of music.
Yeah. And I just think he did such a great job of emulating just wanting to be there and be part of the show and the song just sort of representing that.
What did you think of Katie saying he basically fits on, I guess, the musical spectrum between Michael Jackson and Frank Ocean?
I thought that was interesting. I don't know if I understand really what she's going for there, but I think he's his own beast.
Yeah, I do see sort of the Michael Jackson comparisons, at least in terms of
the,
like,
Michael Jackson one. Yeah, the Frank Ocean one, I'm like, okay, sure. In terms Frank of, Ocean's kind of like Michael Jackson though, so
yeah, in terms of range especially, I would say maybe even like a quirky Bruno Mars.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
So I pointed this out when we were watching the end of the episode together, when Ryan is going into the green room to tell everyone the results, and everyone is very morose. Everyone except Michael.
Yeah, he's like poking his head through. He's like, ah, hey guys.
How's Karen here?
Yeah. He's like a little goober. I love him.
He's by far my favorite performance this episode.
And character. And human.
So God bless him. God bless our little Martian.
Yeah, little Martian.
Moving on to Caleb Lee Hutchinson.
Caleb Lee.
He gets visited by
CLH.
By Harley, his best friend, but not his true best friend. His true best friend is Hershey, his chocolate lab.
Oh my God. Yeah, this got me in the feels. Just so y'all know, Lily has joined us in the recording studio again. Just for this
dog correspondent
to talk about Hershey. So this got me in the feels because my best friend is definitely Lily Bloom.
Wow.
Sorry.
You are staring at me as you say that.
My best friend's my dog. I'm hugging her.
All right. I'm ripping up that Cade card now.
No, but I thought this was just so sweet. I felt like it was just such a cute thing that he did. But yeah, before that, he meets up with his best friend and they run around Disneyland, which I thought was just such a good, like, young boy thing to do.
And I like this, how his friend's so little, too. And Caleb says he's the same height as Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah. And I like how he was just like, yeah, when he sees him, he's like, you look good. And he's just like,
So do you.
It's like, okay.
I love when that personality shines through, because I'll say that, like, Caleb has such dulcet tones, but that knife sort of cuts both ways. We're like,
yeah, it's a little boring sometimes. Like,
you, yeah, like this song, he was very pleasant on it, and it was they keep saying how it was a perfect song choice for him, and it was, but there was really nothing dynamic. Boring. There was nothing dynamic there for me, which is, hey. I mean, again, he has a super smooth tone, and he has this rich baritone bass voice. But sometimes you sort of get hypnotized into that and you need some cookies and a nap afterwards.
Yeah, no, it's true. And this is also the song he sings, You Got a Friend in Me, but it's not something that you would like start jumping up and clapping afterwards. It's not something you're like, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, I can't
say
that a lot about a lot of Randy Newman's music.
Exactly. So I think that it's a great song for him, but I'm glad that we also got to see some personality in some of the other stuff too.
Yeah, and he had, you know, to the point of what Maddie was doing before, like, I like how he's exploring more of his higher range, because I feel like he was comfortable in his like bass baritone range, but now he's sort of going for those higher baritone notes, and I think he's pulling them off, and that's what sort of elicits a few cheers from the audience and helps sort of spike the energy from it. So I'm all for him keeping going in that direction. I wanted to do some more, I don't know, up-tempo stuff, or maybe it's just something more dynamic, you know?
And I think this is one of the ones where Dina was like, I don't really have any notes for him. Like, he's singing it perfectly. Like, there's not really much for me to critique. Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to our last two performances, starting with Katie Turner. You and Katie have something in common. You both have some winking issues.
Oh yeah, we do. So guess what, everybody? I can't wink with my right eye.
They're learning so much about you. I should probably know this information by now.
You do know this information. Yeah, I can wink with my left eye, but I can't wink with my right eye. Sorry. Universe.
World. Yeah. World.
But Katie can't wink at all, so.
You one-upped her. You one-upped Katie Turner. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But we see a little bit more of the quirky Katie this time when she goes to see Idina. I like the editing when she can't get in the door to see her.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt like she was, Idina didn't know what to do with her. She was like, I don't know, this human's very strange.
But it's so interesting to see just what she does on stage, because this was completely different in my opinion. But I loved it.
Yeah, it was good, though. And I felt like she represented herself well on stage, too. And just sort of she was another one that stood still and just sort of was in the moment. And I felt like that did her really well.
Yeah, because I think I'm used to her doing these sort of like more indie,
boppy,
down tempo. Yeah, like pop songs.
Yeah.
And here, I mean, she sang it.
It's like floaty.
I wouldn't say like legit, but she sang it close to like how the original Once Upon a Dream was. She didn't try to remix it at all, but she sounded great on it. Her voice was very solid. I feel like also, like, I don't want to talk too much about, like, acting the song, but
she did, though.
But, like, she could.
She was floating.
Yeah, you could say, like, she seems very friendly and, like, I'm in love and I'm in love with the world.
And she was acting like a princess.
Yeah, so it was so interesting to just see a different side of her. And I'm glad they took Idina's note where instead of her just humming an entire interlude, she, like, hums and then sings and then hums and then sings and breaks things up a little more.
Yeah, because humming is really difficult to portray, and I think that was a great note.
I think Kitty's note is interesting that we're seeing more of a mature side of her. There's just this,
thank goodness, because it could have gotten old quick.
Yeah, there's just this interesting transformation where, like, she acts this way, but, like, as soon as she hits the stage, like, it's almost a different person.
Yeah, I mean, that's true for a lot of people. I mean, we've known some people, like, that we've been friends with that are, like, crazy off stage, and then they get on stage and they're just, like, the most amazing performers. So
yeah, and maybe it's just something where, like, she, when she has a guitar in front of her, when she's in front of a microphone, that's when she feels, like, grounded. Yeah, exactly. So I'm happy to see it. I was happy to also see, like, someone try to sing a Disney song just like a Disney song and her to do it so well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So finishing things off here, we have, unfortunately, our final casualty of the night, Dennis Lorenzo.
Oh, my God, and his daughter surprises him. Ugh. I guess if he had to go, I'm glad that he made it to this night so that his daughter could come with him to Disneyland and they could have, like, such a fun day together.
And also
so
that
cute.
And also that he could go out on a song that he resonates with so well, because, you know, he said when he saw,
oh my God, yeah.
So for those of you that don't remember, so Dennis's story is that, you know, he grew up in Philly and, you know, his dad got murdered when he was like 5 or something, and so he sort of turned to the streets thereafter. And so he talks about going to the theaters to see The Lion King and how he really associates himself with the story of Simba because, you know, he also lost his father and had to try to sort of raise himself. So
yeah,
it's so interesting that this was such a, I mean, I don't think any of these other people had such a personal connection with the material.
Yeah, everyone else was like, oh, I love this song because I love this movie. But he was like, no, I'm Simba.
Yeah.
And my dad's dead.
So he brought a lot of connection to it. And I thought if this was the last song he was going to sing on Idol, I think it was perfectly emblematic of him.
I agree. But unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to Dennis.
Yeah. So it was a nice, like, R&B take on Can You Feel the Love Tonight. He has the runs in there.
I don't think he could have done anything different.
He kills the key change. Like, I will say it's not, maybe this is, again, back to this song. It's not a really dynamic song. Like, the key change was the only way they could really kick it up a notch. But
exactly.
I think he sang it well, as he has done it specifically the past. Dennis was someone who really grew on me starting in the top 14, where I feel like he did 3 extremely strong performances.
I agree with that. I think that he's somebody who I definitely wasn't like a huge fan of from the beginning. But, you know, as we get whittling down here, you can see where he shines and where he definitely has his asset. So I was sad to see him go. But I am happy, you know, that we got to see him sing such a song that was so close to his heart.
Yeah. And he got to really kill it. I'm also very sad because he was probably the one that would have benefited the most from Prince Week, considering, like, he's probably one of the only guys that can pull off that Prince-like range. But I'm happy we got to see more of him because he's also someone who, like, came into Idol with a hole in his guitar, and he's a musician.
That's the American Idol story.
Yeah, he's a musician for a living, so hopefully this has, like, boosted. Hopefully this has boosted everyone, but yeah, even after pouring some barbecue sauce on The Lion King, his game gets fried here as Ryan has to quickly shuffle through who's going through and who's going home.
And he's like, oh, by the way, the difference between some contestants was 0.19%. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that's shitty to know.
So, yeah, and we don't know who it is, but we have Caleb, Gabby, Michael, Cade, Maddie, Katie, and Journey going through. So they very quickly send off Ada, Michelle, and Dennis. I will say a bright side to those 3 going home. There's only 3 weeks of performances
it's
left,
true.
And they're not missing out on much.
Yeah, and I think it's like, you think about it this way, they're down pretty far. I mean, I was sad to see them go, but I was like, wow, they did make it really far. Top 10 is great.
Absolutely. And I believe they brought the tour back this year, and I think the top 10, if not top 14, will be on tour. So
yeah, I don't know.
So you get to hopefully check them out in your hometown. So
mine?
I mean, ours is a pretty big hometown. So.
Oh, okay. No, the listeners.
The listeners' hometown. Gotcha. So next week, we talked about this before, the music of the late Prince, which is, again, a new Idol theme. Going in, what are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I'm a little confused by this because I mean, I love Prince. Prince is great, obviously. Who doesn't love Prince? But I don't know how versatile his music is to these contestants.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what'll be done with it. What will be, you know, what's going to come of it. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what will happen, and I'm not sure why they went this direction, but we'll see.
I mean, they've done so many different songbooks. I appreciate
That's
the
true.
Show.
That go- is true. They're changing it up.
Yeah, I appreciate the show going for new themes, because I think we don't want to get like another standards night. We don't want to get another like Barry Manilow night.
Let's do disco.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's another advantage of doing such a truncated finals period, is because you do sometimes have to pad things out if you're getting from like 13 people down to two.
Yeah, that's true. So, and I mean, I think this is also, you know, I don't know if it has to do with them being on different network. Maybe they're changing things up as well in that sense.
Yeah, maybe it's because Prince is technically a prince. Does that mean he's under like Disney ownership and that's why they were able to get it?
No.
So yeah, we'll see. Like you said, I mean, Prince is also sort of an inimitable artist on his own. So I don't think any of these people
it's
are really
going to limit them too much.
Yeah, exactly. But it'll be interesting to see once again how, I mean, we're ranging from someone like Cade to someone like Maddie to someone like Michael. Like, how are they going to take these Prince songs?
And Caleb.
And Caleb. Oh, yeah, Caleb. So we'll see. I mean, I think if this week is any indication, these people at least know what they're good at. So yeah. It'll hopefully encourage them to say, like, okay, let me really take this song and make it my own. I don't know if we actually know if there's going to be a mentor next week either, or if it's just going to be them sort of on their own.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything, so I'm curious. But we'll see.
We'll see. And only 3 weeks left. We've got it. So top seven is going down to top five next week.
Top five, baby.
Top five, baby. So we're losing two more. I know we keep going back to you to ask for your favorites. So do you have any favorites? And also, do you want to put in a prediction right now? Who do you think might be in trouble as the two to go home next time?
Yeah, so my favorites are still Maddie. And I think my top two are Maddie and Michael. If I do top three, it's Maddie, Michael, Cade.
Mm-hmm.
I think Journey is in danger based off of the voting. And I think probably I mean, it's hard to say. Is it Caleb? Yeah. Is it Katie? Is it Gabby?
I mean, that's the good thing about this season. And maybe it's one of the reasons why I kind of wish it was spread out more, is because I mean, they sort of trim the fat.
They
even
did.
In the top
they
14
did.
Were like,
I'm trying to think what America would do. And I think so far, my only indication is Journey because of the voting.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, this is just such a strong group of singers that are so diverse that I really like watching all of them perform. There's nobody that I'm like, oh, God, I can't wait to watch them trudge through this song. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, even then, I like it's like even when the songs are slower, like with Caleb, I still really enjoy them.
So we shall see. We want to hear from you as to what you thought about Disney Week, who you might predict will go home next during Prince Week, all that jazz. Feel free to reach out to us on social media. Angela, how can people follow you?
They can follow me at Ange Palagi. So it's ANGPALAGGI. And that's on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow Lily, who's sitting right here. Lily correspondent. Just looked up at Lily Bloom Puppy Dog on Instagram.
We should find out if Hershey the Chocolate Laugh has an Instagram account.
Hershey!
And you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type as our dog covers my wife in kisses.
She's got really excited when I said Hershey in like a high-pitched voice.
You're not getting any chocolate, Lily.
What?
You can check out all the other podcasts and articles that I do for a variety of subjects on parade.com and of course in your podcast feed of choice. But that's going to do it this week for the American Idol recap. Angela, great work as always. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week to see what these contestants will make of Prince Week as they go down to five. But for now, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.